I want to send out a special thanks to the sponsors of today's show, William, Josie the Mountain Troll, and Panther. Thank you so much. We humbly and truly could not do this show without you.
Southern Bramble is a Patreon-supported podcast. If you would like to support the podcast and gain access to early, unedited video footage, listener questions, or be thanked by name, you can find us at patreon.com/southernbramble.
You're listening to Southern Bramble, a podcast of crooked ways. I'm Marshall, the Witch of Southern Light.
And I'm too good to function, Austin, Bane X Bramble on Instagram. Marshall, how are you today?
I'm also too good to function right now. It's a lovely Sunday here in Texas. It's still February and it's now officially 85 degrees. Although later on in the week, it's supposed to be down in the 40s and 50s. So if there is one thing you can count on Texas, it's to have extremely moody weather. What about you?
It's gorgeous here. Better than it is there. Honestly, truly.
Really?
Very, very. Yeah, it's not, I have the doors open, the windows open, the fans going. It's so
nice.
Gorgeous. I've been doing that for like the past like month. I love February weather. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Haven't you been traveling too a little bit?
No.
Oh, I feel like I see I feel like I just saw pictures of like you and Maddie, or you and other people, or like at places.
Yes, I was. There's the Ringling Museum here, so the Barnum and Bailey like Ringling Circus.
Yeah.
The owners of that circus, they're like very well known. In Florida, they're dead now. They've been long dead, but they built a manor, this gorgeous home. In Sarasota, Florida. It's I can't remember what it's called, but it's like this very classic Venetian reinterpretation, because the whole thing is like made out of, you know, like stone concrete. I think it was built in like the really late 1800s, like 1890s, or maybe the early 1900s. So it's funny because it's like, oh, this is so pretty and so grand and so delightful. But then like you look at it and it's like, this also kind of looks like something that somebody would have built out of, I don't know, like built today. Like it's very interesting in that way. It's not like hand carved, like it looks like a castle, but at the same time it's not. But it's still very pretty. Lots of stained glass. But they were very big investors in art, and they actually have a really large collection of like Renaissance art that you would not expect that Florida would have. Like we're talking like floor to ceiling Rembrandts, and I think maybe there's a Caravaggio in there somewhere. There's like that really famous triptych of like the Madonna with the two gold panels that people like in, well, I'm sorry, I go nuts over. A very famous portrait of Mary, the Ascension of Mary. Like there's very famous art pieces there that,
wow,
I'm like you see it in real life and you're like, that's weird. Like I've seen this on Google before, and it's like, and then you don't realize like actually how big these paintings are. Like
mm-hmm.
we look at some of these paintings, or at least I have, and it's like you have no scale of reference and you don't see the frames or anything. And some of them truly are floor to ceiling, like 8 foot, 10 foot, 12 foot tall by 12 foot wide paintings. It's actually so crazy. But yeah, that's where I was recently, but that's like an hour and a half, 2 hours away from me. So it's not super
big
far.
Big travel.
It's
so funny you mentioned that. I love we're talking about art with our topic today, specifically because I remember years ago, I went on a cruise that ended up in Sydney, Australia. And while we were there for 5 days, it just so happened that the Mapplethorpe exhibit was opened up in the New South Wales Art Museum.
Okay.
And I was just like, oh my God, they're going to have the
Maple
Maple Corp
Corps.
originals for literally this week while I'm here. So I was like, let's go, let's go. Nobody wanted to get up and go with me. So I went by myself. I literally got up, walked from our hotel there myself. And it just so happened, I know gays, right? Seriously, they want to sleep till noon. Anyway, truly, which was really cool because it was right by the Poison Gardens as well.
Oh,
But
dope.
while we were there, while I was there, not only was I seeing a historic piece of like gay art, they also had the unicorn tapestries temporarily from France.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They
I remember the unicorn tapestries were doing an exhibit. I think they came close to here, or like I saw them advertising an exhibit for it. I don't know if they were doing
Yes.
it here. That's
Like
really cool.
the first time they had been removed from France in over 200 years, they literally do not know their origin outside of the first time they were documented in the 1500s. These absolutely, I mean, just like you were describing, massive tapestries that would have filled castle walls, floor to ceiling. They're so beautiful. I grew up watching The Last Unicorn, of course, and like a lot of the artistry that was used in The Last Unicorn was inspired by these tapestries. And even some of those art pieces are part of like the opening like trailer words, how it has all the intro and everything. It was, I literally just had to sit there for a while and I couldn't even picture. I couldn't even photographize them that well because they were so large. I couldn't stand that far back. Photographize is a word now.
It is a word.
Thank you. It was a truly moving experience. Like I almost got a little emotional looking at some of these because I feel like they just hold so much nostalgia for me. And it was a really, really cool thing. We got to do a whole show about witchcraft and art sometime, I think. I feel like there's a topic there we could explore.
Absolutely. But today,
Yes, today.
we are talking about, what are we talking about, Marshall? I would love for you
Yes,
to see it, say it.
we are talking about the yassification of witchcraft, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
That's so very gorgeous or ugly of you.
Thank you. Mwah.
Do you want to talk? So this is really a product of your invention,
Yeah.
and I was like, no, this sounds like a really exciting topic to talk about. So do
Yeah.
you want to start us off?
Absolutely. I think it's really interesting. In my lifetime, I'm 37 years old. The growth of people who identify as either pagans, neo-pagans, Wiccan, witches, or occultists, sorcerers, magicians, whichever moniker you prefer to don, it is larger and more vast, I think, than it has ever been, at least in my lifetime before, and I think many lifetimes, which I think is a really, really cool thing. And I wanted to get into the way in which the public has become so much more aware of the existence of Wicca, of paganism, of the way in which so many things from pop culture have weaved into witchcraft, or the other way around, weaved out of witchcraft into pop culture. It's popular. Why? Is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? What are the pros and cons? What is the ultimate drive behind it, and what does the future look like for it? I think that is what we're here to talk about today. And I have a few quotes. Do you have anything you want to add before I get started with some of these?
No, I think that sounds delightful.
Oh my God, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So I have an article from 2022 from NBC, and it states in 1990, Trinity College in Connecticut estimated there were 8,000 adherents of Wicca, specifically the Wiccan religion. In 2008, the US Census Bureau figure was 342,000. So that's what, like, 18 years, it jumped from 8,000 to 342,000. And then from 2008 to a study done by Pew Research Center in 2014, it increased that projection several times over in assessing that 0.4% of Americans identify as pagan, Wiccan, or New Age. By 2050, it said the number of Americans practicing, quote, other religions, so faiths outside of Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, and Buddhism, would triple, due largely to switching into other religions such as Wicca and pagan spiritualities. I thought that was that data alone shows that obviously witchcraft and occultism is truly booming. I have an article here from The Atlantic in 2020. And just the title of it alone, because I couldn't read it because it was behind paywall, but I thought it was an interesting topic because it's, I know, right? Fucking bitches. Why witchcraft is on the rise. And then, of course, the subtitle is Americans' interest in spell casting tends to wax as instability rises and trust in establishment plummets. Now, that's something I think we need to come back to. I think that's a very interesting thing to discuss. The fact that we now feel, after the, let's just be honest, this is my perspective, it's our podcast, and I can say what I want. In 2016, Trump took office. So many things shifted and changed with public perception. We had COVID. We've had a massive inflation. We have genocides. We have so many. We have loss of bodily autonomy for women and people who have the ability to give birth. Like, we have a situation for many of us right now where we feel very, very helpless. And I think that that article really dives deeper into bringing the surface, that struggle that many people feel who have just been kind of left to the wayside, who feel stripped of their sovereignty, who feel no other option outside of possibly literal magic. Now, before we dive in, I have one more quote. This is from USC Dorsif or Dornsif. It's an article from 2023, last year in October. And just so you know, this website is specifically a College of Letters, Arts, and Sciences. And it says America's cultural discourse is currently filled with the notions of secret, powerful groups who deploy satanic symbolism and possess a thirst for infant blood. I'm noticing definitely big hints of reoccurrence of satanic panic, right? Such ideas seem to be connected to concerns over tumultuous changes in society. Conspiracy theories are an expression of anxiety about why bad things are happening and who is to blame for them. They use words like cabal, which is a magical term for a group of enemies to describe the people who they believe are responsible. There's always been a more benign revival. There's also been a more benign revival of witchcraft in the form of neo-paganism. Social media is filled with tarot readers, astrologers, spellcasters, and fortune tellers. Witch talk is a thing. And I like how this came with a link, which I thought was funny. Fashion designers deploy runes and cult symbols. Meetups bring together Wiccans for coven wellness gatherings. Neo-paganism's popularity is overlapping with a revived interest in Catholicism, which I think has been even specifically much more recent in the past year or two, and its associated rituals and mysteries, perhaps signaling a broader yearning for enchantment. What do you think about that?
So much. No, so
It brings two really major points that are bringing coinciding around the same time, and how sometimes different groups of people end up interconnecting them, don't you think?
I do. I think though that with all of it, like we're seeing, I think it's really interesting to watch the memification.
Yes.
I love meme study, like
Me
meme
too.
stu like people who are doing like actually like in college courses like studying memification. It's very interesting to me, because memes are literally just entertainment forms of like fast information, and we've always done memification to a greater or lesser degree, throughout time. But I think it's really interesting that, do you remember when witchcraft came about in like the 2020s and it became very popular, and then there was a shift in like maybe 2021, 2022, really, I think it was 2022, when then it was kind of like making fun of itself. So it started like there were people who were kind of like being like, oh, I met a crystal girl on TikTok and I'm never going to over to her house again because she tried to, like, I don't know, slip me a love potion or something like that, jokes. And then now to the point where witchcraft has become cringe. So it's really interesting, and I mean that in like the broader popular sphere. So astrology has become cringe. Tarot cards have become cringe, and that's and I want to express, I'm saying not necessarily that It's the people doing it, the people that are doing it who are becoming cringe. I mean that it's the way that it's perceived by the popular culture as being cringe.
I feel like there's a little bit of a level of misogyny in there too. Like, I feel like a lot of times what I see, not what you're saying, but what you're noticing, I feel like throughout history, we even with outside of the witchcraft world, we see like a any popular thing that girls and women really like, somehow the 4chan guys get into it and they turn it into this thing like, oh, astrology girls are cringe, or oh, like we sh I had to cut the date loose. She asked me my sign and she asked me my birth date, or like, you know, like the, hey mom, what time was I born? Mom says,
Yes,
mom says, get away from her
get
immediately.
away from her. Yeah, no, I think that's a really fair assessment that, like, yeah, it often is coincided in misogyny. And I think there's also like room for, I was just watching who's that one guy? I can't remember his name.
Me
His name begins
neither.
with a J. Like, I don't know who you're talking about.
I don't know.
Katya has started doing a new podcast with Grindr,
Oh, fun.
and it's really good, but literally, it's called Who's the Asshole? And I was listening to it, and I think her second guest was this guy. His name's like JT something. He did all those like this is my impression of videos back in like 2020. And he's queer. He's made a movie called Rotting in the Sun. I haven't seen it, but I really want to. Anyways, he's so hot. I'm in love with him. But anyways, they were talking about how like astrology has become like, oh, I'm over it. And I think that's really interesting. It's like, so it's even working its way into like queer spaces where it's like, I'm over it. And I think that's a better speaking of like, well, that's because astrology shouldn't be used as a personality test.
Yes.
Like the way that the pop culture uses astrology is unfair and not a good use of that divinatory tool. But that being said, I think that witchcraft has become a joke of itself. And I think it's also really funny that there are a lot of people, again, outside of the United States and outside of the Western world who do practice magic, and it is just like a regular everyday thing for them. So I think it's really interesting that, like, I can tell a Protestant wrote one of these articles because they brought up Catholicism and rituals, and I'm like, that's so funny of you. Only a WASP would say that about a Protestant. So gorgeous. But yeah, and now I think we're getting to a point where it's like we're teetering into a yearning for religion, because magic didn't work out for me, so maybe God will listen. And I'm noticing that with a lot of like youth. I mean, think of how I need God in every day of my life, which is a popular Instagram page, meme page, is simultaneously a spoof, but not a spoof at the same time of religion itself, but mainly Christianity. So I think that there's a lot of people who are inspecting their relationship to Catholicism, to folk, putting the folk or taking the folk out of folk Catholicism, and all these things. I think it's really, really interesting a time that we're in, but I also know that we are definitely the witchcraft wave has deflated significantly. And I know that because I run a shop, and I know a lot of other people who run shops, and I know the conversations that are happening right now. It's really, really gorgeous. Not really, but yeah.
It is very interesting because all of the articles that I read, the first two that were all about specifically paganism, Wicca, witchcraft, were mostly, and I want to say 2020 all the way through about 2022. And then the only articles I could find recently from 2023 do continue to mention neo-paganism, specifically like witchcraft or witch talk, and you know, fashion designers employing runes and symbols in clothing. We're seeing it in art, the way it's kind of going into literally public music spectacles, kind of reenactments. But many of them And this is the only one specifically that says the revived interest in Catholicism, the mysticism and the rituals, which we've seen literally happen. And I think this is really, really cool because one of the things that I think people like me, listen, like I was born in the 80s, I was a 90s Wiccan. I grew up with the, I mean, my age group and my bracket puts me in the watching this little bit of an evolution where it's like Wicca is witchcraft, there's no devil in the craft, to hey, maybe this isn't a pre-Christian religion, to okay, so I guess enough historians have said that this isn't a pre-Christian religion. Oh, wait a minute, there is like a devil in the craft. Like I'm watching this change. And what I think is really cool with what's going on right now is I think that we're seeing this intertwining and webbing and enmeshing of religion, spirituality, magic, folk magic, occultism. Like there's this web that is interweaving that I feel like for a long time was really separated out. If there were a lot of people that that were doing still a lot of Catholic mysticism or folk practices, it wasn't quite as public as I think it's become recently. Even a lot of people who, have identified as a witch are now kind of changing how they feel they identify because they're letting their practice evolve. And I think that's totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. Because I mean, all traditions are living. They should evolve. They should grow with you. And I think it's really interesting to watch what was something so separated out is now really growing together. And we're seeing culture clash with modernization, and we're seeing new problems happening and new solutions going towards them, and we're sharing them in ways we haven't always shared before, while also being res more respectful with things maybe we're not supposed to be sharing. So it's this really interesting intersection of religion, spirituality, and magic, don't you think?
I do really think, and I think you put that really elegantly. And I think that there's, like you had noted, a lot of the articles are spanning back. And it's interesting the data that's being driven from censuses, or not, maybe not a census, but like a poll essentially taken from, 1990, and it's significantly less, but also what did we have
The 2008
up
one
until.
was from the US Census. Like that's the
Oh,
straight
yeah.
up, yeah. Like
But I think too, like of course the numbers, well, A, I think the numbers will be significantly larger because we have the internet, but also the numbers from the past are also going to be smaller because we did have, satanic panics. We did have very real implications to people not even practicing occultism, but being perceived to. So I think, yeah, that is tricky that way, but all very interesting things. And I think you're right. I think that it's good that we're all changing and growing and assessing like our perception and how we want to place ourselves within our own spirituality and how we vocalize that to other people, what we call that, what we name that. Because I think a lot of very insecure people would say that that's an inconsistency, and I don't think that that's necessarily an inconsistency as if people are not allowed to grow and change and not be static. So
No, I
we're allowed to have a little dynamism as a treat.
absolutely. And I remember, I promise this is related, but like I remember a while back during earlier elections when someone was saying something like, I don't know about liking her. She flip-flops on things a lot. And I'm just like, flip-flopping in politics is called learning more information and changing your opinion. That's not flip-flopping. And I feel like we can apply this to the way that I've seen some people point to flip-flopping in the occult community and dropping titles, especially in a way that, especially, oh my gosh, especially when it comes to the internet, it's a little T, just like for just a little anonymous, just a
Go
little
ahead, spill it.
anonymously.
I love some
Sometimes
Anon.
I know, right? Sometimes I feel people on the internet are a little hypocritical because
A little?
just a little sometimes because they'll happily call out something that someone else is doing in the moment because they don't like it when they themselves have a long history of doing the same
Of
thing, but maybe
doing
just
the
on a
same
completely of doing the
thing.
exact same thing. And I am not immune to this because I myself have stopped myself or removed things or like deleted something, being like, "Ooh, I don't like that." I'm literally calling something out that I've done. I think there's a level of self-awareness, that when it comes to the internet and the way that it. I use the word community very, very loosely here, right? The way that we try to police each other's spirituality as if you even can on the internet.
Right.
But they will try to control the way that others perceive the way that you would like to present your spirituality. And you know what? I remember reading something that was like when a narcissist realizes they can no longer control you, they try to control people's perception of you. And I've seen that in the way that people will use their following to try to control other people's perception of you. That's been done to me, myself. And personally, you know what? Block, move on. And that's what you got to do.
And that's what you gotta do.
Yeah.
No, truly, truly, I'm like ACAB this, ACAB that. We sure all love to act like police. But that is neither here
Nor
nor
there.
there.
Let me get the tea towel, wipe this up real quick. Hold on, hold on, hold on. Okay.
Jesus is
Sop.
a biscuit. Sop it up.
Sop it up. Okay, so I wanted to get into this is some things I wrote that I thought were very interesting. I personally think these are very modern influences that as a millennial, as probably any Gen Zers listening, and Gen Xers, probably not boomers though. But I think a lot of Gen Xers were, and you know what? Actually, one of these, even boomers will relate to. And I actually want to start with the last one first, if that's okay with you. I don't know why I did it in this order. Does this sound good to you?
Yeah.
Excellent, cool. So I want to get some modern influences that may have caused this boom. And this one's a really interesting one because I learned this little tidbit of information a couple of years ago when I went to go visit Salem, Massachusetts. I was taking a tour and we stopped by the big statue of Elizabeth Montgomery as Samantha flying on a broom on this. It's like this gorgeous bronze statue in the middle of Salem Town Square. It was erected because Bewitched had an episode in 1970 that actually went to Salem, Massachusetts to film, and it was actually one of their first color episodes. It fueled their witch tourism, attracting a higher population of practitioners back to the most famous place in America, known for its witch hysteria. And what's really cool, what he was explaining, and he even shot a picture of people protesting Elizabeth Montgomery coming to Salem to film in Salem, the city, because specifically there were a lot of people living there who wanted nothing to do with the history of the witch trials. It was a stain on their ledger. Especially if you've ever lived there for a long enough time, you know about the supposed curses on the Sheriff's Department, which literally has closed down, so they use the Boston sh the closest sheriff at a neighboring city because there is a literally a curse on the title of sheriff in Salem Town, and several other things, of course, that have happened from, I believe it was the curse of Giles Corey that has caused a few other little things, including a fire in the early 1900s that people believe are caused by his curse. So they were not interested in bringing attention to more Salem witch trial stuff in Salem. And there were a lot of other people there that were very welcoming of her. And because they ended up filming this, because that episode aired during a time period in 1970 when you only had maybe like, you know, 3 to 7 channels, depending on what type of TV you had, you may not even have had a color TV. So when something came on, you as an individual, as a family, watched it when it happened, and people built lives around their favorite shows, especially like I Dream of Jeannie or Bewitched. This was one of those shows that rocketed Salem, Massachusetts into the witch tourism that it has today. It brought a lot of people who were more interested in learning about witchcraft and getting closer to this perceived place of witch hysteria. And you know, in the 1980s, that's one of the things that brought my gosh. She has the shop Enchanted, Laurie Cabot there, and she started the Cabot tradition. And that's basically how we got to the point where Salem is today. I think that had a massive influence on the way the rest of the United States and people around the world think of Salem, Massachusetts. We all know that no real witches were executed there, but now there are more real witches there than ever before.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting. The person who, because I can't remember, like, obviously I didn't live there,
Right.
but there was a mayor who really like leaned into it at one point several years ago, and he really like helped, I think, through the 90s, like ramp up that Salem witchcraft tourism. And Laurie Cabot at one point was like the official witch of Salem,
I
and
think
all
she
of
still
that.
is, isn't she?
Well, see, I don't know if they still have that as like a title, not because they've like voted her out or something, but I think it's because once power had changed over to other city officials, like Salem, at least from some of the people who I know who live there now, have kind of said that Salem doesn't want to. They're leaning more into different histories of Salem, and don't want to give too much attention to the witchcraft stuff. But I mean, I think that the damage is done. Like, Salem will always be known as Witch City in the United States. So it's yeah, but it's very much like they want to lean more into the pirates and stuff like that. So that's so what I've heard. But yeah, I don't think that's an official title anymore.
Makes sense. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. So, I also want to go just completely backwards here because it's funny enough. The next one I have, and this is a big one for a lot of practitioners, The Craft. The movie The Craft came out in 1996, right? Fairuza Balk, Robin Tooney, Neve Campbell, and Rachel True played a cast of modern witches. And it's so funny because even to this day, I think that movie is totally timeless for the story that it tells. And when it came out in 1996, there was a really, that was during the 90s Wicca boom. And they did something really smart. The creators decided to be inspired by Wicca, but not want to go so far as to insult practicing Wiccans, so they changed it slightly to where they had a deity named Manon. I thought that was, to be perfectly honest, would I have been insulted if they had just gone straight like, oh no, we're Wiccans? I've been like, well, that's not Wicca, but at the same time, I'm cool, I'm watching it, I like it, I don't mind. But I guess they just wanted to be extra special, aware, and I think that's pretty cool. But I deeply think that influenced a lot of practitioners. They saw something that was the first time they saw something that was probably a lot closer to real witchcraft. We all remember that I bind you, Nancy, from doing harm, harm against other people, harm against yourself. I bind you, Nancy. And we've all written that down in our teenage books of shadows and probably done it to a friend or two.
Tis true. It's a canon event. I cannot help it.
No, it is. It's a canon event. Of course, we're 90s witches. Or what is it? We're 90s witches. Of course, we've wrapped a white ribbon around a friend and said, I banish you, Nancy, from doing harm against other people and harm against yourself.
Right, exactly. No, I think that the craft definitely, like you had said, it holds a lot of weight for a lot of people.
I think entertainment, just like the bardic tradition of sharing stories or oral fairy tales and campfire tales, these things leave impacts on people. They have taught people how to perceive different ideas and be inspired by things that end up shaping their spirituality and ideas of the natural and supernatural world, which I think it's funny because that's also what ended up inspiring the show. We can't get out of this without talking about the show Charmed. This show spanned like 7 years. And specifically, the creators of it were inspired by The Craft. They went so far as to even use the opening song. As it
It's from the
is
Smiths.
from The Smiths, and it was a Here Is Now. Is that how it goes? What is it?
I think it's something like that. I can't
Yeah.
remember.
It was so inspired by The Craft that they, How Soon Is Now? That's what it was. This show was the first one to use the word Wiccan in almost any popular television, probably besides Scooby-Doo and the Witch's Ghost, which also fucked up what the word Wiccan was, but that's okay. Also, neither here nor there.
And 1/16th.
1/16,
On my
one
mom's
sixteenth,
side,
a real Wiccan.
Charm did use. Now that I'm pulling this from the recesses of my memory,
I am 10 years
I
older,
never.
so I have a little bit of a.
I never really watched Charmed. It wasn't my bag. It wasn't my bag.
That's okay. So you were influenced by Charmed.
Right. No. I mean, I certainly watched it though,
Yeah.
because you know what else is there a little gay boy on a Saturday morning to do?
Truly. If you
But
have the
like I know.
TBS Superstation, it is on rerun every morning,
Every
weekday,
morning,
to this day.
absolutely. To this day,
To this day.
the impact, it's there. But I do remember them using the term Wiccan. And but then at some point it felt like they did kind of divest from using that term. They did seem to, didn't they? Because then it all kind of
They
was
got
about.
really fantastical. They had mythical magic schools. They had Lady Godiva coming out of storybooks, but
Of
they still
course.
carried on like the aspect of Wiccan. They even had a Wiccaning, which was more of a blessing for a child. And they had, you know,
I
the Wiccan
remember
way.
this.
And I think one of the reasons why I found that it was so pervasive in a lot of practitioners who were inspired by it, were because of the way in which I noticed so many new practitioners coming into it with this idea that you can have no personal gain.
Yeah,
That
yes,
was
yeah.
something super, super strong. It was a storyline, which is so dumb because they did that. There was so much personal gain in that
So
show.
much personal
But
gain.
I've seen the way, don't get me started on Facebook groups in the comments section. As long as there's no personal gain, it's
Right.
like, of what the fuck are you doing witchcraft for if it's not for personal gain? Like, yes,
Right.
you can do it for other people too, but I mean, none of us are doing it solely for other people.
The narratives that do come out of Charmed, you're absolutely right. I've heard that. I've been there. I've seen it. That one was an interesting one. What was one from The Craft do you think that was very? I feel like if we're talking about like a what is the narrative that's being spun from everything we've talked about, I feel like Bewitched very much says witches, we're just like you.
Yes.
And I feel like The Craft is like witchcraft can be dangerous, but if you're pure of heart and Rachel True, then you know things will be okay for you.
Yeah.
That rhymed.
It was Robin Tooney, though.
Right, but your heart's true, Rachel. You know,
I gotcha. I gotcha. I
thank
gotcha.
you. I'll leave the,
You were
I'll,
making a poem. You were being
right. I'll let
artistic.
the poesis to you. I'll leave that
Thank
to
you.
you.
Thanks.
You're very quick with a rhyme scheme. But that being said, and then I feel like with Charmed, it kind of wraps both of those things up. But one big thing that it also narrizes is that, or like gives the narrative of
No, I
is
like
that
it. I like it a lot.
there's a weird evangelical, like
We're
you
good
get out what you
witches.
were good witches, you get out what you put in this ancient pagan tradition. Somehow the concept of punishment still
Well, I
reflects
mean,
back on us, you know.
yeah,
So therefore no personal gain.
and the craft really, really had a heavy, like, what you the threefold law,
Yeah.
heavily with the threefold law. There was even a section in the movie where the shopkeeper was telling her, like, you know, everyone knows about this rule. What you
And
cut
she's
put
like,
out
I've
comes
never
back
heard of
times
that.
three. I've never heard of that. And then she says the golden rule from Christianity was do unto others as you would have others do unto you, as if that's equating that what you put out comes back to you times three.
Right. So I definitely see, yeah, I think that there's it's interesting how these things get perpetuated through the narrative. And I think it's really interesting to note too, all of these films are everything we've just talked about, they're all American. So they're all being perpetuated in the 20th century, at least. And they're all being like put forth this idea of like a very American Protestant WASP lens. And I think you can really see the flavor of that showing through in a lot of the narratives that are being spun.
Yes. No, I definitely see that. Speaking of narratives that we create, especially when it comes to spirituality, I thought that there was an interesting statistic that popped up recently, and I want to get into this because we're talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly, things that have helped, things that have hurt, what it means when we popularize witchcraft. This was an interesting study. America's largest group of religious nuns. When I say nuns, I don't mean N-U-N-S, but nun is an N-O-N-E-S.
Okay.
We are at the highest percentage ever documented in the United States before at 28%. That means that almost a third of people in the United States identify as having no religion or spirituality. Specifically, 17% said atheist, 20% of that 28%, of course, 17% of that said atheist, 20% of that said agnostic, and 63% of that said nothing in particular. I feel like when we are getting to a point in time when people who are no longer identifying with the most popular or majoritative religion, they start either dropping everything altogether or start experiencing or exploring the ideas of other things. And I feel like this is one of the first centuries in the history of the establishment of the United States where we have been diversifying what is spiritually known and actually publicly discussed more than ever before. I guarantee you there are, of course, still people today who will espouse that America is a Christian nation. But I guarantee you it would have been much more highly espoused in the 1950s, 1960s, 1930s, back when, school still had prayer in it, when you had a very specific public foundation of religion. We're in a time now where more people than ever are no longer going to church every Sunday. They're no longer identifying with maybe what their parents brought them up as. Have you noticed that too?
Yes, and I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of atheism, really. So I probably wouldn't be the best to go on about it.
I have no issues with atheism. I'm sure at one point I probably even identified as one. I think.
Yeah, I think we've all been at that point. I oftentimes I equiv like I give it the equivalence of like. Sure, we all are teenagers who want to be mad at something at some point, and so we confidently stomp our foot and say, "I don't believe in you."
Sure. I think that's just I think that's just a fucking annoying atheist who wants to disprove you.
That is true. And I guess I should clarify that that is kind of the background I'm going through here. I know certainly plenty of people who wouldn't necessarily ascribe to a religion,
Yeah.
which is fair.
Reminds me of that old joke, an atheist, a CrossFitter, and a vegan walk into a bar. Which one do you think got kicked out first? But I mean, like 17, only 17% of that 28% identified as atheist, 20 as agnostic, and 63 as, oh, nothing in particular. It's not like they're like, I don't believe anything and nothing
Right.
exists, as much as
And
like, hey, I'm not giving any attention to spirituality in my life.
right, which is totally fair. I think secularism can become a problem, and yet at the same time, it's really great for politics. Secularism
Yeah.
and policy do very well together, and yet there's no way to separate one's spirituality from one's policy. So.
That's true. One of the points that I have here about the reason why this percentage is so high, and one of them specifically was stating dogmatic religion is appealing less and exploring spirituality is appealing more. So more of those people who are leaving behind maybe more oppressive experiences within religious institutions are now more open to individualized spiritualities. What's interesting though, because we're going to talk about the good and the bad, right? This also opens a lot of evangelicals who just jump from one dogmatic belief to another, especially in like New Age, ascension, law of attraction practices. This is how we get that New Age alt-right pipeline really fast.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the alt-right pipeline comes from especially the historical narrative, the ahistorical narrative or pseudo-historical, I should say, that there's a mythic past and there's a place where we went wrong and we have to go back to that. And then you get into like a lot of people who are like trad wives, which is it can be a pipeline into neo-Nazism.
So basically, make America great again.
Very yes, absolutely. Because you can ascribe like mythic past narratives have a lot of Nazi. It can easily lead into Nazification.
Well, absolutely. Look at the way in which this. I remember the first time. Okay, so we're going to talk star seeds. I remember the first time that I was introduced to the concept of star seeds and the way in which people believed they were descendants of an alien race. And I feel like that was an interesting idea in abstract in science fiction, but the way that it ended up actually being applied by the people who espoused this origin. It got so far away from the origin that we forgot, like, hey, this was racial theosophy. This actually goes back to some really, really nasty shit that at the time, I guess, when Madame Blavatsky was coming up with it, she thought she was being very innovative. But the way in which I think you describe this mythic past, I think we need to be much more aware of the origin, the real origin sources of where some of these things come from, so we can understand how they may be misapplying them today. I'm a big believer in if you don't understand history, you're doomed to repeat it. And honestly, we're watching history repeat itself right now, even when we knew about it. So maybe it works both ways. Who knows? Maybe that's just a whole other conversation on structures of power. But I do find it very, very interesting thinking about the way I have seen people jump from escaping evangelical churches only to fall into the hardest policing of the threefold law ever. Or they're happily to tell you, like, oh, I'm so sorry about your cancer diagnosis. What did you do to deserve that? Like, I've seen that. It's crazy. It's so victim blaming. And honestly, I remember saying that to someone once. I said, you can't accuse the victim of something horrible happening to them and then say, like, it's okay, it's just my spirituality. Like, no, that like if a person espouses that their spiritual beliefs say that all gays are going to hell, and then I say that makes you a bigot, you can't say, oh, well, that's just my religion, it's just my beliefs. I'm like, well, those beliefs are bigoted. That you gotta own that that's what it comes with. And I feel like some people think that because it's their beliefs, their religion, that it excuses that prejudice, that bigotry. And unfortunately, I think that comes with that sort of evangelical to alt-right pipeline, even in these spiritual communities that we see today.
Absolutely.
Totally. So the last one I really want to discuss before we kind of like teeter out is capitalism. This is, I think, a major driving force in the Yossification of witchcraft, wouldn't you say?
I would wholeheartedly, absolutely, unequivocally agree. It's really bad, and I think that and it goes into multiple layers, and I can't even say like we're all guilty of it to a degree. So there's a role that everybody plays, and yet at the same time, like if you're in the system, you are playing the game. There isn't an excuse from it. It's all wrapped up in there. So, but I think a major problem that we see is like what you have. One of the things that you have here is the baby witch, the influencer shop owner pipeline, which I know you have some other points and we will get to those, but I
Sure,
think
sure.
that's one that I that's the one that I see like maybe the most is really interesting. And there absolutely is room for progression, and as being somebody who came onto the scene, but I had been practicing for a long time before that, but came onto the scene and then eventually did open a shop. I did wait 2 years, but and didn't necessarily do it out of I'm going to open up a shop now. I didn't have plans on doing that. It just happened. I think that is one that I see a lot, and it's one that I find very interesting how that happens. There is room for progression, and as somebody who owns a shop, I will say that it does push you in a way that you wouldn't be pushed if you were just doing your own thing. But at the same time, I find it really interesting when we see people just come right onto the scene. And the thing is that we had talked about it a little bit earlier before, or we could have led into it. The spiritual community has always been rife with grifters and shady people and scammers, and it's never going to go away. And spirituality is a quick, easy thing to make money off of. It's not really, but like it at least it's perceived as that way. It's not tangible, it's not quantifiable. So it's very easy to say, of course, I can cleanse you of this thing. Give me $5,000. Do you remember the lady who bought herself a Birkin bag?
What?
Yeah,
Tell me more.
there was a psychic one time. It made like headline news. This was a long time ago. Way before 2020, there was a psychic who did a cleansing on somebody, and she put in like she needed a Birkin bag as part of her, I think either as part of her list of materials.
Like the person doing the cleansing was like, you need to buy a Birkin bag.
No, she bought herself a Birkin bag.
Oh.
Isn't that gorgeous? Honestly, say I'm like, no, it's Birkin magic.
With
What are
the
you talking?
client's money
Yeah,
or
with the
oh,
client's money. Yeah. And the
okay.
client was like, you're scamming me. And the psychic was like, not, no, I'm not.
No,
And
I'm
it
not. I
was a whole
needed
thing.
this Birkin
I
to
needed
break
this
this
Birkin,
curse for
this
you.
magical Birkin.
This
And
magical Birkin.
honestly, I believe her. But yeah, what do you think about that?
So the baby witch to influence her shop owner pipeline, I think is, in my opinion, I think I try to get to the root cause of why something exists before I form an opinion about it in the first place. Because I think when it comes to the reason why it exists, is that I think a lot of people see creators showing off extremely aesthetic things, which is another big conversation right now in the zeitgeist is aesthetics. But these aesthetics are so beautiful and almost intimidating, and they feel like, oh, mine don't look like that. I need to live up to that. It creates this really weird level of keeping up with the Joneses in a specific thing that used to never be shown to anyone. So it's really, really strange. I guess it's really not strange. It's just human nature of wanting to be validated, validating ourselves. If I can sell you a spell on the internet and you may write me a view that says it worked, that feels validating. And I think a lot of these new practitioners start on the internet and immediately they feel the only way they can be validated is by creating some, by participating in the commerce. I'm here to say flat off the bat, that is no more validation than you completely not showing it to anyone and living within your own craft and practice. You do not need outside validation in your practice for it to be validated. It's valid because you're doing it. And hopefully it's working, most importantly.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, like that's my biggest thing is no one can say anything about you if it works. Or I mean they can, but I mean like you can't be shaken by that. Like if you are a 5D ascension starseed, which I mean like what's the difference between that and witch blood theory? I mean, so it's like if you're a 5D ascended alien starseed, but like you can call a spirit or an alien or whatever and read the boots out house down mama, like who am I to tell you? I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. I don't know where you're getting your shit from, and I also don't care. I mean,
Yeah.
a lot of the times most people are like,
It's not my business.
It's not my business. And
Perfect.
most people in the world who actually live either within magical traditions or in spaces where magic is a thing, a lot of people are like, I don't give a shit. Just
Yeah.
tell me how to fix, if you're predicting that I'm gonna lose my job in 10 days, then either tell me how I can get a new job or tell me how that I can keep this one, you know? So but I do think that it can be. I remember somebody came onto the scene one time, and copying is such a thing right now too. I've been noticing that going on a lot. Like, I feel like that's a true extension of capitalism where
Do you have any
there's
examples?
I do, but none that I can actively say because
Should I get the tea towels?
because
Should I
they're
get the
going
tea
on.
towels?
No, well, I won't spill this tea because it's not my tea to spill. But
Fair, fair, fair.
it's something that I literally opened up the Instagram app before we started recording this, and I was like, that looks strikingly similar to somebody else's work that I know, who's been doing that a lot longer than this person has. So it's just like, yeah.
Do you think it's more copying, or do you think sometimes there's also the aspect of like a lot of people who are participating in the cultural zeitgeist of the occult kind of jumping in on the same flow of the same river sometimes?
Well, that I can totally like a friend of mine and I, we joke all the time, like, oh, there she goes copying me again. We'll send each other our stuff, and or she'll like put something out, or he'll put something out, and then I'll be like, I'll call them up or vice versa, and they'll be like, hey, just so you know, this is like happening. Like I tell people what I'm working on all the time, maybe not publicly, but like I'll especially if I see somebody else is doing something similar and there's no, like, I haven't posted about it or whatever, there's something going on. And that happens all the time. That happens a lot, like a lot. It's actually like a little startling sometimes when you look at it. It's like, how are we all working in the same current? But funny enough, I find that it's a lot of people who I have very overlapping magical practices with.
That's the one.
But there's a difference between that, and it's like, it's really interesting how the colors you used, the fonts are the same, the wording is the same. Very gorgeous of you. Very interesting. That I do find the difference between copying. It's that's very telling.
So it's funny you mention this because as of right now, in the current book that I'm writing, I have a symbol that has come together, and it's a triangle pointing up, a triangle pointing down, a cross in the center, and a circle in the center of the cross. I'll show you what I'm talking about here.
Okay.
And I put it all together. And as I did, it looks like the hexagram with a cross in the center and a circle. And I was going to use it in the work that I've been writing on. And as soon as I put it all down together, because I was writing about it in abstract, and then I drew it down and I was like, this looks familiar. Like, I know that obviously a hexagram exists outside specifically the concept of the Star of David, but I was like, no, this looks really familiar. Where have I seen this before? And I'm like, oh my God, it's the symbol on the cover of this Psalter's of the
Charmer Salter.
Charmer Psalter. And I was just like, I was going to use this on the cover of my book. What was I
Well,
thinking?
in your def I mean, maybe on the cover of your book would be like T, but also that symbol exists outside of
Of course it does. But what's very,
with the
very,
cross and
yes.
everything.
Yes. And what's interesting for me is the cross actually wasn't representing like a Christian cross, but more so the crossroads where pacts are made. And the triangles were representing working in a positive light or working in a more baneful light, depending on which one you might use or when you might bring them together. So this is just some of the things from my own abstract mind coming together. And as it did, all of a sudden I found myself realizing, oh, I'm literally using the exact same symbol that was used on the cover of this extremely well photographed and known book by Jemma Gary. And I made some alterations, not really with that symbol, but more so how I was going to present it throughout the book,
Yeah.
just to make sure I do not want anyone feeling as though this isn't sourced within the material and instead taken from an outside source.
Right.
But I think that really kind of goes into a little bit of an intersectionality of what you were talking about, where sometimes there is just a current that people who are in the same sort of mindset of practice or craft will find themselves flowing in, and a lot of that same sort of information starts popping up. But then there's the I'm going to recreate what this reel or TikTok you made, and I'm going to do it identically.
Right. Or like if you went and you took that symbol and you're like, I think I'm gonna make a 6x5 book in like a rust colored cloth bound, and then put that symbol on it with in gold foil, and then maybe call it like the Psalms charms or charmer or something like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That would
Twisted
certainly
biblical
a
verses.
twist and twi even that, I mean, come on, that's even better. But
Well,
I'm more
do
creative at least.
you remember that time that creator messaged me and told me that I was copying them because I was using seals from the Key of Solomon
Oh yeah, like they
in chalk.
invented in chalk, yeah, like they invented using
Solomonic seals in
the
chalk.
Solomonic seals, yeah, and in chalk. Which is honestly so gorgeous of them. I too own the S.L. MacGregor Mather's translation of Clavicula Solomonis, Sloane MS 1234, whatever the number is.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly so gorgeous. Another one here that you had said is the commodification of resources and the removal of cultural significance. Such as, an obvious one being white sage, High John the Conqueror root, quote unquote voodoo dolls, et cetera, et cetera. Do you want to elaborate on what you mean by that? I mean,
Yes.
it's obvious, but.
Absolutely. So, I remember back to our discussion with Juju. This was a really, really important discussion for me because one of the big things that was so important about understanding specific cultural practices like hoodoo is that you cannot remove the culture from the practice. And when
Right.
it's about capitalization, you are removing the culture because you're trying to sell it to as many people as possible. You remove the thing that makes it specific to the people it belongs to, and you make it mass produced. Once you've mass produced something, you've stripped it of everything that actually created it in the first place. So I feel like when we all know that poppets exist outside of specifically, the voodoo tradition. But at the same time, everyone sees a picture of a poppet with pins in it and immediately go, voodoo doll. And personally, I think that comes from some kind of shady things that happen through entertainment, especially in
Yeah.
Hollywood,
Yeah.
that
The
have been.
Skeleton Key is still low key iconic of a movie,
Oh,
but
it's iconic, but
we can say it's bad.
super
We can say
bad.
it's problematic.
The Serpent and the Rainbow. We've got like all these different ones that really get into very specific cultural practices that kind of strip them of their people, culture, and spirituality, and make them all about
Well, there's fetishization
the
too
fetishization. That's the
comes
one.
through there, and so then you get like New Orleans specifically, being a place of like mass ca like fetishization, and it also is like just a byproduct. Like I had said, the capitalism exists. We all play a role in it, and therefore, like it's going to happen, no matter if you are ardent on staying within your own tradition or whatever. Like at some point, like it will happen to you if you're being public about it and if you're doing your work and advertising your services. Not saying that, and we should also be very conscious of consumerism and capitalism are not the same thing,
Yeah.
and
Commerce is just being able to. People trade things. You
right.
know what? I'll pay you three chickens. You give me a donkey. Like the commerce has existed amongst people who trade, who see value in services and things throughout history. Capitalism is a different situation. I think people really misunderstand that sometimes.
Right, and so like selling your services is not a problem. Paying for initiations is not a problem. None of these things are inherently bad. But that being said, there is a exoticization, a fetishization of a lot of these practices, including witchcraft in general, especially oftentimes when it looks darker, spookier, I find that the fetishization really seeps in a lot more there, or things that people don't understand. How do we eliminate that is by, I think one of the best things that you can do is having community and mentorship and people to actually tell. And that's a hard thing to find. It's not so easy. It's just like, oh, I'm gonna go Google my witchcraft teacher. In some cases you can, but having people to like tell you when you're out of line, having people tell you, helping people, or like having the ability to help people and they help you in return. Also, too, being able to work in like a local environment to where like you can understand that local landscape better. I take up far less of an issue with people, quote unquote, using white sage. If like you live in South Dakota, where I know it grows like in abundance, because I've been there and have collected it myself. I was a child, but like it exists, it grows, and
I've even heard people say, like, what if I grow it in my own backyard? And I'm just like, you grow whatever you listen. If you are going to plant seeds and grow whatever you want to grow, no. For one, no one on the internet has to know. Secondly, they're only going to know if you tell them. Thirdly, you're growing a plant in your own backyard. What you end up doing with that plant is none of my business. It hurts no one. You're not talking about it. You're not making yourself an authority about it. You're not giving in to mass production of capitalism or I was going to say deforestation. You're not giving in to the way in which it's being harvested, probably possibly incorrectly. Like, I feel like the internet really took something and swung that pendulum really, really hard without leaving any room for the literal nuances that still exist. So I see what you're saying when it comes to that for sure.
Yeah, it's a many-headed beast.
Many-headed beast, I like that.
So it can it's hard to parse out. And I think one of the best things that you can do
Go on.
is just mind your own business. Don't worry about what everybody else is doing. And
And
why
you don't
are
have to
what
share what you're doing all the time.
right, yeah, actually take it from me, it's better if you don't. I don't know why everyone's so worried about what everybody else's paper is looking like. Didn't y'all ever hear, keep your eyes on your own paper?
Put your manila folders up.
Put your blinders. And why did they make you do that? That was so funny.
I have a quote from the Pulitzer Center article that I think goes really well with this section and then our last topic when it comes to it. The Pulitzer Center articles from 2020 says, witchcraft has historically been tied to counterculture movements, shifting away from the status quo of Christianity, capitalism, and the patriarchal society. However, with the rising popularity of witchcraft and the prevalence of earth-based spirituality in popular culture, the role of witches is changing. For businesses like Flower, this is specifically was interviewing a business called Flower Power Herbs. There's a fine line between counterculture and mainstream. Keeping your products accessible to everyone while also attracting new, trendier clientele. And this was a small business that actually was small. And then, as the popularity of crystals, because I read this whole article, the popularity of crystals were growing, they had to start outsourcing more, because and then they had to start increasing their prices, because as when it came down to the actual like comparable pricing at how things were being priced, they had to match it, they had to meet the demand. It kept growing, because if they wanted to be and by the time that they did that, all of a sudden these bigger corporations come in here, like Etsy, drop shipping, Amazon. They come in here and end up outpricing or underpricing to get rid of some of these smaller shops. So I think one of the bigger problems when it comes to the capitalization of witchcraft we have here is the way big corporations who want to capitalize on it, they don't care about erasing that culture. They don't care about your small Etsy shop where you actually make real things with your own hands. They don't care if it goes under.
It begs yourself why, for those who are wanting to, go into it. I know a lot of people who are witchcraft or magic or running shops. It's their job. That's their livelihood. Myself included. I do it full time, and you're never going to become rich off of it. You're not, I mean, maybe if you're being shady, but if you're being authentic and genuine, you're probably not going to be financially wealthy in great sums of money. You'll have good and bad days. But yeah, so it always begs the question of what are you doing? What do you want out of your business? I mean, Amazon's gonna Amazon. And so many people buy from Amazon to supply their, the stuff for some of their businesses, myself included.
I bought wholesale beads from Amazon before when I wanted to make specific pieces of jewelry.
So I don't know. I don't know. Capitalism is a many-headed beast. You should try your best, in my opinion, to be genuine and to be, don't worry about being mainstream to attract more clientele. I mean, unless it's what you set out to do, but then, I don't know. I don't have an answer. I don't have a solution. I
Gotcha.
just have thoughts.
I think when it comes to capitalism and witchcraft, it's booming because it's popular, but popularism is what drives capitalism, and it will continue to change on to new and different things. So if we want to also see our community stay alive, we have to remember that. And I think a lot of times when we think about how we're going to support our community, is sometimes that means maybe taking a little extra time to find someone who has a shop who sells that thing instead of going directly to Amazon. When you buy things from a creator on Etsy, look and see where they're sourcing the information from. The shop actually will usually have like an address at the very top of their profile page. If it's, if it's st I don't know, stoning stones m being mined in Madagascar, maybe go towards the ones that are a little bit more local to you. I'm a big lover of using stones from Texas. Not everywhere is going to have all sorts of stones, but like when I want to use rattlesnake bones, I think of te I want to get Texas rattlesnake bones. If you're looking to source something, try sourcing more local, especially when it comes to plants. And when it comes to plants that aren't local, why do you feel you need to use those? I feel like as a practitioner, these are questions we should be asking ourselves. Why am I considering using belladonna in something if it literally has a hard time growing in the state or land that I live on? I might use something in the similar rounds, but actually grows in my backyard, like Datura. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that there isn't anything necessarily wrong with using outsourced herbs.
Oh, sure. I'm just thinking about the way in which we go about buying directly from major conglomerates versus
And I agree too. I mean,
shopping local.
can you also go outside in your like I obviously I'm a lover of all things that smell good from all over the world. Yes, I use oud. Yes, I use labdanum. Yes, I use frankincense. Yes, I use rose essential oil, or like rose that's definitely not grown in the United States. Most of the good roses are grown in Bulgaria.
I did not know that.
Yeah, Turkey, Bulgaria.
Gorgeous.
But that being said, like, can you also go outside, like, and find, like, do you know how to utilize the plants that also grow in your own area? So the plants that grow within a framework or a tradition, i.e., frankincense, if we're talking about, Western, quote unquote, Western occultism, a lot of the times it's going to call for sandalwood, frankincense, aloes wood, those kinds of things, right? So can you utilize that? And then, but also, can you go outside and utilize your own plant stuff? Even in traditions like hoodoo and things like that, the consumerism, the rampant consumerism of hoodoo that happened in the early 19th century, like Hajjan probably grew in specific parts of certain hoodoo traditions. And so there are, or at least like one Hajjan might be, morning glory, specific species to one person. And then Hajjan might have been another type of flower or plant or root to somebody else. That's an example. And I don't know if that's the truth. Don't quote me on that. But for example, like a lot of the times these plants would have been more closer to home, more based on tradition, so that people could actually go out and get them. They weren't mail ordering those things. But then as soon as catalogs and mail order hoodoo started becoming a thing, that's when you see the like the amalgamations of different plants kind of being conglomerated into certain genuses. Like, do you know what devil's shoestring is? It's honeysuckle flowers or honeysuckle roots,
Really, I didn't
specifically
know that.
viburnum. So usually it'll be from the viburnum family. But is that a byproduct of all of us agreeing on that because eventually, like, that's what was used? Because they are long, stringy, woody roots. Did somebody else use devil's shoestring that might have come from a different plant that also was either viney or something like that? Probably. So it's just like, you know what I mean? Like it's gotten commodified, and yeah, I'm using hoodoo as an example, but it's happened in every tradition to a greater or lesser extent if it becomes part of the popular culture. So I think the best thing that we can do is, like, I've always called like pine pitch or colophony resin. I've called that the Florida frankincense. You know, like, I can go get it from a tree outside my backyard. I know how to harvest it in a way that doesn't damage the tree. Takes a good year to get all of it, but, like, you know, I know how to do that. And I think we can all do that in our own way.
And hey, like I know that I'm not harvesting dragon's blood from a tree outside of my backyard here in Texas, especially because it comes from across the world. For the
And the
most part,
trees are
it's a
huge. They're
huge,
like,
but I can go to my local metaphysical shop and purchase it there instead of going on Amazon and just purchasing it. You know what I mean? Like sometimes that's not also possible, but I'm just thinking of different ways in which we can try to keep these
no,
smaller
for
businesses
sure.
alive.
For sure. I will also say that if you are buying it from a metaphysical shop, just be aware they're also probably buying it from just another wholesaler who's getting it from so that's your own beast. You know, you're gonna have to pick and choose, like, what do you want? You know what I mean? And I'm sorry, I'm not
No,
trying to
that's
pop,
true.
I'm not
Pop
trying to
it.
pop your bubble.
Pop it.
I'm just saying, it's like every if you open up a metaphysical store, like, you everybody gets the same catalogs, everybody gets the same and that's why I actually prefer looking to people like, I of course I'm going to use myself as an example, but also, you know,
Plug
people
away.
like in my own community, my own actual community, who I do know are making the things by hand. You know, people who do actually, like, they're not just buying their stuff from Amazon, you know what I mean? And there's nothing wrong with having a retail store where you're buying wholesale and selling it. I mean, some of those things are great. I also, where else are you going to get your incense burners? Because I don't know very many people who are out here hand forging
You're not
their own.
hand carving yours?
Right, exactly. But that being said, yeah, a lot of the times, like, if you go to them, like, they are also selling mountain rose herbs, wholesale bulk supply, bulkherbs.com. So it's cooler if you can, get your candles from a hand poured candle shop, candle maker who supplies their own, or like who gets their wax and hand pours them, somebody like Lovey Arts, or a million people who do make candles, but she's the one who came to mind, because I really like her stuff. So it is what it is.
It's a pick a battle moment.
It is a pick a battle moment, and that's what I try to say about capitalism, is we all play a
We
role into,
participate.
we all participate into it, because if you try and turn around to untangle it too hard, and God bless you for it, you're not going to get very far. The best thing that you can do is buy less, shop local, or shop within people of your own community, and make your like make your own stuff. But at the same time, like, not everybody has those resources. Not everybody lives it, in a magical community. So pick and choose your battles.
Pick and choose. So I'm curious, what are our takeaways from this discussion? And do we like this emergence of witchcraft in the mainstream? What do you
No.
think? You don't like it?
No, not really.
Are you
It's
not special anymore?
No, I think that I don't. No, I think that's actually wholly it is I think that there's so much. I posted something last night on Threads,
What
and
did
I
it
was like,
say?
I'm so thankful. It's funny you should ask. You liked it. I think I said along the lines of, like, I'm so thankful that I know people who are doing really cool magical work, really important magical work, people who are doing things that are personal, practical, theoretical, but not like speculative, like a academic or an armchair occultist. I mean, many of them are academics, but like, I'm really thankful that I know so many people who do magic. And it's not about my approval, obviously, but I am thankful that I know so many people who are like, I know the work that you're putting in there, and I think that it's really cool. Like, you were one of the first few people who sat down and you're like, I'm going to take the concept of storytelling, at least as a book, I should say, and basically build a grimoire around storytelling. That's really cool. I know other people who are doing really intense magic are bringing their traditions that nobody has translated, or nobody has, like, people in the West would be like, I've never heard of that. Or people who are doing really cool fusions of the many multitude of traditions that we all have, or not all of us, but like so many of us have, like, do come from more than one background, and more than one tradition. And how do we amalgamate that, or separate that, or things like that? So I think it's really cool, and I'm happy to see that. And I think my main takeaway is that just be genuine, be truthful, be true to yourself. Like, you can be good, you can be bad, just be good at it. And ultimately, like, at the end of the day, it ain't that deep. None of this is that deep. I promise you. I'm not, I've never been a nihilist, and I'm still not really there, but I am in my absurdist phase. I'm like, girl, none of this shit ain't that serious. Just do magic. If and hopefully it helps your life out. And then maybe you can start helping other people. But like, who gives a fuck? Who gives a fuck? 2020 is over too. Like, we're in 2024. The witchcraft community, for all intents is perp and all intents and purposes, it's dead out here, girl. It's dead. And that's not me trying to be overly nihilistic about it. That's just me being so real with you. Like, the people who are having the conversations, we're all having it with the same people, and that's cool. That's fine. I'm not. That's not a problem. I'm just saying, like, it's not in the popular culture, so what are you wanting to get out of it? All you can do is bunker down, hang out with the people who are really cool people and good people, and that people you trust, and go from there.
You know, it's funny.
It's
I was
funny. I was
thinking,
thinking.
this is just my personal opinion. I'm kind of a 50-50 person. Like, there are things that I'm like, I love the popularization of this. I love that it's gotten more mainstream. One reason is because I, maybe this is just a me thing, I am less afraid to discuss it and for people to know about it in my life. When I was in the 90s and I was young, like, I faced a lot of like intense consequences for my joy in witchcraft and being open about it. Having experienced that and having an absence of that as an adult now is very freeing. It gives me the chance to someone say like, "Oh, what are you writing a book about?" And I'd be like, "Ooh, I don't know if it's safe to say this to this person." That still happens, I think, for a lot of people. But I am more regularly around people where I can say, "Oh, it's a collection of short stories that kind of teach witchcraft. Oh, that's so cool. How interesting." And that's it. Like, there's no shock.
There's a lot of that,
There's
yeah.
no like, "Oh my God, what? Oh, I need to change my hair appointment." Or like, you know, like it, my, oh, my whole family, except for some of them, have read pieces, just parts of my books.
They didn't read the orgy one.
No, they didn't. Well, I didn't read
They
all of
didn't.
them. No, I don't think so.
And you're like, and that's okay. They
And
don't
that's
need to
okay.
read
That's
every
just
single one of
fine.
them.
My granddad still asks me, "Are you going to write about anything else?" And I just say, "No." And then we both laugh. And then that's it. And I remember a time where that not would not have been the outcome. So I
Right.
love that. But on the other flip side of that same coin is the negative. And I think one of those things is the more popular something gets, the more watered down it becomes to make it more applicable to the masses. And I think this is what we're talking about when it comes, especially when it comes to capitalization, is now you have people who, "Oh, I'm lighting this candle with intention. I'm a witch. I do tarot. I'm a witch. I read my horoscope and Cosmo Girl. I'm a little witchy." Like, we've talked, and you know, we can go into blue in the face at what a definition of witch is or isn't. I also don't think, for this conversation, that matters.
Right.
but
And
it,
you can choose to identify yourself, I guess, however you
however,
want.
however you want, that's totally up to you. It's not my business. But I will say that. That does mean that when I say I'm a witch, there is not a clear definition to everyone what that means. And I think there's going to be pros and cons to this altogether. So ultimately, that's kind of where I sit. And my main takeaway is similar to you. Listen,
Be good, be bad, just be good at it.
yes, exactly. And to be perfectly honest, like, I like sharing certain aspects of my craft, but there are many parts that I don't share at all because they're not for anyone else. And I think if you are on the internet, if you are listening to this podcast, if you follow either of us, I want you to know, like, you do not have to share everything to make people, other people, believe that you are a legitimate practitioner. You don't need that at all. I'm shaking my
Yeah.
head. I was silent
That's
for a second.
tea. Yeah, no, you're so right.
Yeah,
Like,
you don't need that. There's no keeping up with the Joneses as a witch. This is that's social media competition across the board, not
right.
just in the occult world. People will fall into it. I've fallen into it. I'm sure I'll continue to participate in it. But
Yeah.
yeah, yeah, literally, we're gonna do this podcast.
And I am happy that we're doing this podcast, and
Yeah.
I think we're really having some good conversations. So thank you for making this, like, kind of conceptualizing this episode. I loved the name,
Yassification of
the
witchcraft.
yassification of witchcraft, and like you said, we're all going to participate in social media, and that's totally fine. But yeah, you don't owe anybody else your practice, unless you're roping in clients and charging them for it. That then, but
Then you
for
literally owed it
then you
because they
then you
paid for it.
literally owe it
Yeah.
because
Now,
and also how it affects them. But like you said, you don't owe anybody else your magic.
absolutely. And the one last thing I want to say that I love about the yassification of witchcraft is it's gone from Sabrina the Teenage Witch to the Good Witches of Charmed, all the way into modern age, where we are now embracing a little bit more of the maybe the Bad Witches of Salem, the show. Maybe we're getting into the devil worshippers of Sabrina and Chilling Adventures of Sabrina with the aunts. Like, we're now starting to go full circle where, hey, we can make the bad witches the protagonists. Maybe we can actually revel a little bit more in enjoying our darker side. Maybe embracing the rage is okay. And I think that's the coolest part. You've been listening to Southern Bramble, a podcast of Crooked Ways. I'm Marshall, the Witch of Southern Light. You can find me on TikTok, on Instagram, and Threads at Witch of Southern Light. Buy my book, Cunning Words, a Grimoire of Tales and Magic, sold on Amazon, self-published by me. If you are anti-Amazon, that's totally okay. You can get the black and white version at barnesandnoble.com. If you own an occult shop, a independent bookstore, my book is also available on Ingram Spark. Please check it out. Cunning Words. As a self-published author, it would mean the world to me to walk into your store and see it there.
And I'm Austin Bain X Bramble on Instagram. You can find my website at BaineXBramble.com. That is where I sell all my services, perfumes, and other witchy wares. I do have a small road opening service going on right now. It's called the Rite of the Phoenix. You have time to sign up for that. I'm also doing three lectures in the months of March, and that will be my first one at Botanica Obscura called Venenum Venom, The Witching Path of Venus, where we'll be going through the magics of Venus and her spirits, as well as plants, of course. I will be doing my lecture, which you can find on BaineXBramble.com, The Infernal Menagerie, which is witchcraft with the fantastical spirits of earth, sky, and sea. And then I will be doing the Salem Witchfest Spring Agora, Ghost in the Shell, Magic Machines, and Post Human Witchcraft. So I do hope you can join me in that one. You can find at salemwitchfest.com. Thank you all so much, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your afternoon.
At this point in time, we would love to thank our tier 3 supporters from our Patreon by name: Jason, Nico, Colby, Callie, Johnny, Jameson, Jennifer, Cindy, The Witch of Patapsco Forest, John, Giles, Jennifer, Shauna, The Modern Babylon, V, Lisa, Ariella, Keith, Jens, Addity, Tracy, Timothy, Witch Rafa, The Lady Ghost, Seashaw, and of course, Key Archibald. Thank you so much for your support. I truly can't tell you what it means to us to have you be part of the making of our show.